Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, we are going to start reading Banicula. Do you know the story of Banicula?
No, never.
Well, here we go. Introductory letter. Gentlemen, the enclosed story is true. It happened in this very town to me and my family with whom I reside. I have changed the names of the family in order to protect them, but in all other respects, everything you will read here is factual. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Harold. I come to writing purely by chance. My full-time occupation is a dog. I live with Mr. and Mrs. X, called here the Monroes, and their two sons, Toby, 8, and Pete, 10. Also sharing our home is a cat named Chester, whom I am pleased to call my friend. We were a typical American family and still are, though the events related in my story have, of course, had their effect on our lives. I hope you will find this tale of sufficient interest to yourself and your readers to warrant its publication. That was a letter to the editor. Here we go. The Arrival, Chapter 1. I shall never forget the first time I laid eyes, these now tired old eyes, on our visitor. I had been left home by the family with the admonition to take care of the house until they returned. That's something they always say to me when they go out. Take care of the house, Harold. You're the watchdog. I think it's their way of making up for not taking me with them, as if I wanted to go anyway. You can't lie down at the movies and still see the screen. And people think you're being impolite if you fall asleep and start to snore or scratch in public. No, thank you. I'd rather be stretched out on my favorite rug in front of a nice whistling radiator. But I digress. I was talking about the first night. Well, it was cold. The rain was pelting the windows, the wind was howling, and it felt pretty good to be indoors. I was laying on the rug with my head on my paws, just staring absently at the front door. My friend Chester was curled up on the brown velvet armchair, which years ago he staked out as his own. I saw that once again he'd covered the whole seat with cat hair. And I chuckled to myself, picturing the scene tomorrow. Next to grasshoppers, there's nothing that frightens Chester more than the vacuum cleaner. In the midst of this reverie, I heard a car pull into the driveway. I didn't even bother to get up and see who it was. I knew it had to be my family, the Monroes, since it was just about time for the movie to be over. After a moment, the front door flew open. There they stood in the doorway, Toby, Pete, Mom, and Dad Monroe. There was a flash of lightning, and in its glare, I noticed that Mr. Monroe was carrying a little bundle. A bundle with tiny, glistening eyes. Pete and Toby bounded into the room, both talking at the top of their lungs. Toby shouted, "Put him over there, Dad!" "Take your boots off. You're soaking wet," replied his mother, somewhat calmly, I thought, under the circumstances. "But Mom, what about the..." "Stop dripping on the carpet. Would somebody like to take this?" asked Mr. Monroe, indicating the bundle with his eyes. "I'd like to remove my coat." "I will," yelled Pete. "No, I will," said Toby. "I found him." "You'll drop him." "I will not." "You will too."
"You see Mr. Winston now?"
"Yes."
"Mr. Winston is the king."
"Okay, are you listening?" "Okay." "I will not. You will too. Mom, Pete punched me. I'll take him, said Mrs. Monroe. Take off your coats this minute. But she became so involved in helping the boys out of their coats that she didn't take him at all. My tranquil evening had been destroyed, and no one had even said hello to me. I whimpered to remind them I was there. Harold, cried Toby, guess what happened to me? And then all over again, everybody started talking at once. At this point, I feel I must explain something. In our family, everyone treats everyone else with great respect for his or her intelligence. That goes for the animals as well as the people. Everything that happens to them is explained to us. It's never been just, good boy, Harold, or use the litter box, Chester, at our house. Oh no, with us it's, hey Harold, Dad got a raise and now we're in a higher tax bracket. Or, come sit on the bed, Chester, and watch the Wild Kingdom show. Maybe you'll see a relative. Which shows just how thoughtful they are. But after all, Mr. Monroe is a college professor and Mrs. Monroe is a lawyer. So we think of it as a rather special household. And we are, therefore, rather special pets. So it wasn't at all surprising to me that they took the time to explain the strange circumstances surrounding the arrival of the little bundle with the glistening eyes now among us. It seems that they had arrived at the theater late, and rather than trip over the feet of the audience already seated, they decided to sit on the last row, which was empty. They tiptoed in and sat down very quietly, so they wouldn't disturb anyone. Suddenly, Toby, who's the little one, sprang up from his chair and squealed that he sat on something. Mr. Monroe told him to stop making a fuss and move to another seat. But in an unusual display of independence, Toby said he wanted to see just what it was that he sat on. An usher came over to their row to shush them, and Mr. Monroe borrowed his flashlight. What they found on Toby's chair was the little blanketed bundle with glistening eyes that was now sitting on Mr. Monroe's lap. They now unwrapped the blanket, and there in the center was a tiny black and white rabbit sitting in a shoebox filled with dirt. A piece of paper had been tied to its neck with a ribbon. There were words on the paper, but the Monroes were unable to decipher them because they were in a totally unfamiliar language. I moved closer for a better look. Now, most people might call me a mongrel, but I have some pretty fancy bloodlines running through these veins, and Russian Wolfhound happens to be one of them. Because my family got around a lot, I was able to recognize the language as an obscure dialect of the Carpathian Mountain region. Roughly translated, it read, take good care of my baby. But I couldn't tell if it was a note from a bereaved mother or a piece of Romanian sheet music. The little guy was shivering from fear and cold. It was decided that Mr. Monroe and the boys would make a house for him out of an old crate and some heavy-duty wire mesh from the garage. For the night, the boys would make a bed for him in the shoebox. Toby and Pete ran outside to find the crate, and Mrs. Monroe went to the kitchen to get him some milk and lettuce. Mr. Monroe sat down, a dazed expression in his eyes, as if he were wondering how he came to be sitting in his own living room in a wet raincoat with a strange bunny on his lap. I signaled to Chester, and the two of us casually moseyed over to a corner of the room. We looked at each other. Well, what do you think? I asked. I don't think rabbits like milk, he answered. Chester and I were unable to continue our conversation because a deafening crash commanded our attention. Pete yelled from the hallway, Ma! Toby broke the rabbit house! I didn't. I just dropped it. Pete won't let me carry it. It's too big. Toby's too little. I am not. You are too. Okay, fellas, Mrs. Monroe called out as she entered with the milk and lettuce. Let's try to get it in here with as little hysteria as possible, please. Chester turned to me and said under his breath, "That lettuce looks repulsive, but if there's any milk left, I get it." I certainly wasn't going to argue with him. I'm a water man myself. At that moment, the crate arrived, barely standing the strain of being pulled in two directions at once. "Ma, Toby says he's going to keep the rabbit in his room. That's not fair. Harold sleeps in his room." Only sometimes, I thought, when I know he's got a leftover ham sandwich in his drawer. Toby's a nice kid, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't hurt that he shares his stash with me. It was, after all, at one of those late night parties in Toby's room that I first developed my taste for chocolate cake. And Toby, noting my preference, has kept me in chocolate cake ever since. Pete, on the other hand, doesn't believe in sharing. And the only time I tried to sleep on his bed, he rolled over on me and pinned me by my ears so that I couldn't move for the rest of the night. I had a crick in my neck for days. "But he's mine," said Toby. "I found him." "You sat on him, you mean." "I found him and he's sleeping in my room. You can keep smelly old Harold in your room and Chester too if you want to, but I'm going to keep the rabbit in my room." Smelly old Harold, I would have bitten his ankle, but I knew he hadn't changed his socks for a week. Smelly indeed. Mr. Monroe spoke up. "I think the best place for the rabbit is right here in the living room, on that table by the window. It's light there and he'll get lots of fresh air." "Pete's taller than I am," cried Toby. "He'll be able to see the rabbit better." "Too bad, Squirt," said Pete. "Okay," said Mrs. Monroe through clenched teeth. "Let's put him to bed and make him comfortable, and then we can all get some sleep." "Why?" asked Pete. "I don't want to go to sleep." Mrs. Monroe smiled a little too sweetly at Pete. "Look, Ma," said Toby. "He's not drinking his milk." Chester nudged me in the ribs. "Didn't I tell you?" he said. "Excuse me while I make myself available." "Hey," said Toby, "we gotta name him." "Can't that wait till tomorrow?" asked Mr. Monroe. The boys shouted in unison. "No, he has to have a name right now." I have to say I agreed with them. It took them 3 days to name me, and those were the most anxious days of my life. I couldn't sleep at all, worrying that they were really gonna call me something like Fluffy or Petunia, as Mrs. Monroe had suggested. "Well, all right," sighed Mrs. Monroe. "What about, say, Bun Bun?" "Oh, there she goes again," I thought. "Where does she get those names?" "Yuck," we all said. "Well then, how about Fluffy?" she offered hopefully. Pete looked at his mother and smiled. "You never give up, do you, Ma?" Meanwhile, Chester, who had also been named Fluffy for a short time, was rubbing against Mrs. Monroe's ankles and purring loudly. "No, Chester, not now," she said, pushing him aside. "He wants to help us name him, aren't you, Chester?" asked Toby. As he scooped him up into his arms, Chester shot a look at me. I could tell this was not what he had in mind. "Come on, Harold," Toby called. "You've got to help with the name, too." I joined the family, and serious thinking began. We all peered into the box. It was the first time I had really seen him. "So this is a rabbit," I thought. "He sort of looks like Chester, only he's got long ears and a short tail instead of short ears and a long tail. And a motor in his nose." "Well," said Pete after a moment, "since we found him at the movies, why don't we call him Mr. Johnson?" There was silence for a moment. "Who is Mr. Johnson?" asked Toby. "The guy who owns the movie theater," Pete answered. No one seemed to like the idea. "How about Prince?" said Mr. Monroe. "Dad," said Toby, "are you kidding?" "Well, I had a dog named Prince once," he replied. Prince, I thought, was a silly name for a dog. We found him at a Dracula movie. Let's call him Dracula, said Toby. That's a stupid name, said Pete. No, it's not. And anyway, I found him, so I should get to name him. Mom, you're not going to let him name him, are you? That's favoritism. I'll be traumatized if you do. Mrs. Monroe looked in wonder at Pete. Please, Mom, please, Dad, let's name him Dracula, cried Toby. Please, 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 please. And with each please, he squeezed Chester a little harder. Mrs. Monroe picked up the bowl of milk and moved towards the kitchen. Chester followed her every movement with his eyes, which now seemed to be popping out of his head. When she reached the kitchen door, she turned back and said, let's not have any more arguments. We'll compromise. He's a bunny, and we found him at a Dracula movie, so we'll call him Bunnicula. That should make everybody happy, including me. What about me, muttered Chester. I won't be happy until she puts that milk down. Well, guys, is that okay with you, she said. Toby and Pete looked at each other. And then at the rabbit. A smile grew on Toby's face. Yeah, Ma, I think the name is just right. Pete shrugged. It's okay, but I get to feed him. Okay, I'm going to put the milk back in the fridge. Maybe he'll drink it tomorrow. What about Chester? Toby said, dropping the frantic cat to the floor. Maybe he would like it. Chester made a beeline for Mrs. Monroe and looked up at her plaintively. Oh, Chester doesn't want any more milk, do you, Chester? You've already had your milk today. She reached down and patted Chester on the head and walked into the kitchen. Chester didn't move. Okay, bedtime, said Mrs. Monroe. Good night, Bunnicula, said Toby.
Good night, Count Bunnicula, Pete said, sarcastically in what I took to be his attempt at a Transylvanian accent.
I may be wrong, but I thought I saw a flicker of movement in the cage. Good night, Harold. Good night, Chester. I licked Toby good night. Good night, smelly Harold. Good night, dumb Chester. I drooled on Pete's foot. Mom, Harold drooled on my foot again. Good night, Pete, Mrs. Monroe said with finality as she came back into the living room. And then more calmly, good night, Harold. Good night, Chester. Mr. and Mrs. Monroe went up the stairs together. You know, dear, Mr. Monroe said, that was very clever. Bunnicula. I could never have thought of a name like that. Oh, I don't know, Robert, she smiled as she put her arm through his. I think Prince is a lovely name, too. The room was quiet. Chester was still sitting by the closed kitchen door in a state of shock. Slowly, he turned to me. I wish they had named him Fluffy, was all he said. End of chapter 1.